we've had a number of emerging managers in venture talk about how the experience of raising money, especially from high net worth individuals, can deteriorate into some stereotypes around fundraising. There was one woman who went through our program who is married to another emerging manager in venture, and they both were talking to some of the same LPs. And one of the things that happened is they would compare notes afterwards about the questions that were asked. And consistently, she was being asked to talk about what she had done historically in her career. What did you actually do in that job? What was your role actually in that job? Who did you report to? What were your responsibilities? And consistently, the questions he received were on, where could this new venture fund go? What is the vision for this venture fund? What are the possibilities? So I think that it's really important for both institutional and somewhat less institutional investors to really be thoughtful and reflective about whether or not they are treating all managers the same, or if they have inherent biases in the questions that they ask or where they're spending their time.
I'm Ethan Devitt, and welcome to the 50 Faces podcast, a podcast committed to revealing the richness and diversity of the worlds of investment and tech by focusing on people and their stories. I'm joined today by Courtney Russell-McCrae, who is co-founder and managing partner at Recast Capital, a platform supporting and investing in emerging managers and venture. She was most recently a managing director at Weathergauge Capital, a boutique venture fund of funds. Previously, she was a general partner at Weston Presidio. She's a Kaufman Fellow, Class 3, and a member of the NVCA Forward Board of Directors and the Alzheimer's Association Board of Directors for North California and Nevada. Welcome, Courtney. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Ethan.
Well, let's start with your background and career journey. Where did you grow up? What did you study? And how did you come ultimately to enter the world of venture capital investing?
Yes. So I was born and raised in the Chicago suburbs. And as you may be aware, Chicago is one of the more segregated cities in the United States. I ended up going to University of Illinois, where I studied finance and accounting. And I just loved learning about new businesses and being inquisitive about companies and how they make money and how they operate. And so I ended up working for GE Capital for 5 years, very fascinating work, looking at companies and understanding how they work, how they make money, and whether or not they could afford to take on leverage. I then went over and went to business school at Kellogg Northwestern. And I decided that I wanted to be an investment banker, ended up spending a summer at CS First Boston and decided that I did not want to be an investment banker. And so went back to business school, wanting to invest directly in private companies as far down the cap table as I could get a job. I ended up interning for a small boutique venture fund of funds that happened to be in Evanston, Illinois. And then I became a Kaufman Fellow. Kaufman Foundation started the Kaufman Fellow program before their time. They had a hypothesis that if you had more diverse general partners, you would end up having more diverse founders being backed. So this was, you know, some time ago now. And with that fellowship, I joined a growth equity fund called Weston Presidio that was based in Boston and San Francisco. And that's what brought me to San Francisco originally. I joined Weston Presidio in the back half of basically right before Fund 2 launched. And then I was made a principal in Fund 2 and Fund 3. And then I was promoted to general partner in Fund 4. I was there for about 7 years. And then I made the move over to the limited partner side. And most relevantly, for 10 years, I was one of three managing directors on the investment side of the house for a boutique venture fund of funds called Weathergauge. And so that's when I moved from the GP side to the LP side and actually really started to get well steeped in the venture capital community, even more so than when I had been a Kaufman Fellow. While I was at Weathergauge, it was quite surprising to me that most of the venture capitalists when I started investing in venture were white men. And yet the emerging manager community not only was where many of the outsized returns were coming from, but it also was a much more diverse group of individuals. And so that's really where I had the passion around trying to both generate returns, but also change the landscape of who is a venture capitalist by investing in and supporting emerging managers. I joined WeatherGauge in the back half of WeatherGauge Fund One, and then helped with my partners to raise and deploy WeatherGauge Funds 2, 3, and 4. And then we had a separate account with the City and County of San Francisco. I was there for exactly 10 years. And when it came time to raise WeatherGauge Fund 5, my other two partners are a bit more advanced in their career, and they decided they didn't want to do that. So with their support, I went off and launched Recast Capital back in 2020 with my now partner, Sarah Zilkowski. And the rest is history.
Well, that's so interesting and such a lot packed into that trajectory there. But the first that I'm curious about is saying you wanted to work as far down the cap table as possible. What was the allure, I suppose, deep down into the equity side? What excites you about the area of venture capital? And I suppose, what are some of the pitfalls that go with that?
Yeah, so my thought process was, I mean, I had had great experience providing and supporting providing debt, senior debt, subordinated debt. And back then you got a slug of equity, warrants and the equity at the same time. And I knew how to do that. And so when I was in business school, I really wanted to be investing in the earliest stages of these companies. And I wanted to be able to actually have upside. In debt, you have a somewhat capped upside versus if you're actually investing in preferred stock or you're investing in the common stock, you have more upside. And if you pick properly, it is a much more lucrative business to be in and a lot more fun, in my opinion. So that was my thought process. In terms of venture, I have incredible respect across the private equity spectrum. I think there are fabulous and very less than fabulous practitioners all the way from mega buyout all the way to seed stage investing. And I do think that venture is one of those places where if you pick the right practitioners, the right venture capitalists to back, you can have the potential for really outsized returns. Because if you pick the right companies at the earliest stages, you're getting in at very reasonable valuations, and you have the possibility of having really outsized performance. And you're also at the cutting edge of new company development, innovation. And to me, that is fascinating to have a view into that world.
I'd love to just dig into that point, given that you've worked in a fund-to-fund operation that has invested in venture capital firms. You mentioned finding the right founder to back, and I presume also the right venture capitalist to back is key. Some of those traits you're looking for, could you just expand on that?
Yes, when it comes to backing venture capital funds and how you figure out who's going to outperform, there is an art piece and there's a science piece. For sure, there's value in understanding that this individual knows how to pick good companies, having something you can sink your teeth into. But also, there's a sea of sameness in so many ways. You meet with a lot of venture capitalists and you hear a lot of the same stories and a lot of the same ways of sourcing, of adding value, of getting realizations. And so is what we're really looking for is contrarian. It's something that it hits you over the head when you see it. And then you have to spend time through due diligence and your own hard work to figure out if it's contrarian good or contrarian bad, because it can be very close to one another. But it's really trying to find those managers that are able to select companies in a different way, able to get access to, be able to invest in attractive companies with the entrepreneurs who matter, able to add value to those companies in a way that perhaps is different than what we've heard other managers talk about. Or you've got a unique way of getting liquidity or getting to an exit that I haven't heard of, or it's off the beaten path in some way. And then it comes down to really understanding, is this individual a good picker of companies? And it's certainly both quantitative, but also very qualitative.
Really interesting. So now you've given us the backdrop to Recast in terms of when you started it and why. Specifically looking at its mission and its focus, what is the problem perhaps or the gap in the market that it's designed to tackle?
Yes. So institutional investors that invest in venture capital are aware that certain brand name venture funds with high Roman numerals consistently put up superior performance. But there's a number of those managers that as the fund sizes get larger, the returns get more muted. In addition, you find with many of the brand name firms over time, some of the best money makers at those organizations leave. And so there's always, I believe, a need for an institutional quality institution to identify the potential blue chip names of tomorrow for institutional investors. It not only is a pathway to increase diversity of who is a venture capitalist, it has also, they're raising right-sized funds with scrappy, hungry, well-networked with the entrepreneurs who matter, general partners that have the potential to put up outsized performance. And number three, it is a potential access to the blue chip names of tomorrow. And so we launched Recast as a platform to both invest in and be supportive of emerging managers in venture. We define emerging managers as institutional funds one, two, or three. And we have a preference for diverse partnerships. We define diverse partnerships as those that have at least one member of the senior investment team that identifies as an underrepresented demographic within the venture ecosystem. And because these partnerships are usually one to three general partners, that represents a significant percentage of decision-making authority, as well as economics at the fund level. And then also usually it translates into the management company level. So we have the goals of both driving exceptional returns and creating substantive change in the venture industry. One of the biggest problems we see within the industry is that in today's day and age, underrepresented emerging managers are getting overlooked by investors who are more comfortable in a downturn in a corrected market, investing in funds they've always invested in. And historically, those funds are led by white men at big name firms. So without diversity, the industry becomes quite stagnant.
And you've spoken about diversity quite a lot throughout this discussion, mentioning your impressions of the various schools you went to, as well as in your early days in the industry. Maybe looking at capital raising in particular, because that's where the rubber really hits the road, I suppose, when it comes to getting access to that network, having the network put their money where their mouths are. How was your experience in capital raising, and what do you see from your vantage point in terms of the capital raising experience of some of those diverse managers?
Yes. So Recast Capital has three different parts of our business. We have a fund of funds that actually invests in diverse emerging managers in venture. We also have an educational program we've been running since 2020, which is cohort-based, tuition-free. And we've had 78 funds go through our educational program. And then we have a third part of our business, which is called Recast Accelerate, which we just launched, which I can talk more about later. That is a nonprofit providing grant dollars, charitable dollars to female venture capitalists to help them in the growth of their business. So my discussions around fundraising can be applied both to the fundraising for our fund of funds, which I also was a part of in my previous role at WeatherGauge. But in addition, we have unique access to information around fundraising for emerging managers through our educational program. So starting with the educational program, the fundraising market has changed for emerging managers, diverse emerging managers from 2020 till today. So if you go back to 2020, 2021, 2022, there was access to capital from high net worth individuals, from select family offices, and from select values aligned foundations. There also were dollars that were coming off of corporate balance sheets from big banks, from various supporters of diverse emerging managers in venture, or just emerging managers in venture from folks like Carta and Twitter, as well as Wells Fargo and Bank of America. Is what you found is that over time, many of those corporate entities, once they get done making their investment in emerging managers, it's done. The program has run its course and they have enough investments. So some of those players have pulled back and have become less active. Others have continued their program and they continue to be keenly interested in supporting diverse emerging managers. Likewise, with certain venture capital funds, have allocated a certain percentage of either the fund capital to invest in underlying emerging managers that could be potential deal flow for them as the companies mature. But in addition, sometimes general partners themselves would invest personally in emerging managers to get the deal flow. Is what we found is the pullback has come with this market correction with select foundations, select family offices, and select individuals, where there's been this reversion to liquidity, there's been a reversion to investing with what they consider to be lower risk funds. And so it remains to be seen whether or not the funds that are in the market in 2023 are going to be as successful as they would like to be. We continue to believe that the best managers will continue to be able to raise capital in this environment, but we may be seeing that a number of emerging managers are less successful in this environment.
What does that mean from a practical standpoint when the brakes go on at the capital raising side? I think we talked in our pre-chat about down rounds and flat rounds and obviously needing to keep a tighter eye on cash burn, perhaps less investing in the business in a way that self-fulfilling prophecy of slower growth then as a result. Have you seen any real impact of that dynamic?
Yes, very good points. There are a couple of different ways that this environment is changing. One is there has been, and there continues to be, way too many emerging managers in venture. So there will be some portion of those emerging managers that end up going back to wherever they came from, whether that be being an entrepreneur themselves or going back to a certain vertical that perhaps they were with and successful in their previous career. When it comes to the players that are actively investing in this market, we've already started to see it with the numbers. There are less funding rounds happening at the earliest stages, but the companies that are getting funded are raising larger pre-seed rounds. So that speaks, in my mind's eye, to two things. One is a thought process by the investors and by the CEOs that they need to have a longer runway between the seed round or the pre-seed round and the Series A. They need to have a longer runway. Number two, it usually is a sign that these are better CEOs and founders. So is what I believe is happening right now is the right companies are being backed at the earliest stages, and they're being backed with larger syndicates to allow these companies to have a longer runway. They also are much more cash driven than just growth for the sake of growth like they had been for so many years. And then to your point, one of the things that we're doing with our educational program and also with the managers we've backed is the idea that in this environment, you may see more pay-to-play situations. And so having the need to have reserves in this type of a market is helpful. Even if you weren't planning on investing in the Series A or perhaps the Series B, sometimes you have to be investing in those rounds in order to protect your position in the earlier stages. And so having a thoughtful reserve management strategy or an SPV strategy in this environment is an attractive one.
And have you seen cycles like this before where there is that belt tightening that maybe forces better business practices, a more disciplined business building, and perhaps is a more humbling process overall?
Yeah. So for better or for worse, this will be my fourth downturn that I have spent in the financial industry. And each time it feels like it's different, and yet there's so much to be learned from each one, many that are similar takeaways and some that are unique to the situation. But there are many emerging managers who have never seen this before. And this correction is different than the 2001-2002 downturn in that the companies that have been backed over the last 3 to 4 years or 5 years are real companies. Perhaps the valuations got ahead of themselves, but for the most part, these are real companies solving real problems, and they've got real customers. And in the last downturn, there were many companies that frankly just disappeared because it turned out that the value proposition for their customer base was not there. So I do think this is very different. This market correction is not because of the venture industry. This is because of some of the macro environment issues. And so there will continue to be incredible innovation. We have to be very thoughtful about how you get access to capital and how much runway you have as a company and as a venture fund.
And you mentioned earlier the educational initiatives that you put in place and how you are really so much more than a capital provider to the entities that you work with. Can you just expand on that a little? Tell us what is needed. And I suppose maybe when it comes to that education, what do people maybe say they really hadn't thought of themselves or is the biggest impact?
Yeah. So when we launched Recast, as a fund of funds, you end up saying no more often than you say yes. It's important as a fund of funds to have a concentrated and diversified set of underlying managers. And you need to have diversification by underlying industry and by geography. And so we wanted to be more helpful to the community than just what we could invest in through the fund of funds. So we started the educational program, as I mentioned, tuition-free, application-based, and we've had 78 funds go through it. My partner Sarah and I are both institutionally trained investors in venture. So we bring our friends, both from the GP and the LP side, to talk about issues broadly around fundraising. So we're just trying to accelerate the success of these managers in market. One of the things that was surprising to me is we've been providing executive coaching for free, 6 sessions of executive coaching to anyone who goes through the program that wants to have that executive coaching. One of my surprises is how valuable that is to this community. It is very lonely being a diverse emerging manager in venture. And so we do not ask what those conversations are like, but we do ask what are the topics that are discussed. And it is somewhat surprising to me that there are conversations around imposter syndrome, conversations around lack of confidence in fundraising meetings, trying to get better at that. It's less surprising to me that perhaps if you have a partner, they're trying to understand how to have better partner dynamics and how to make that a healthy relationship. That one made sense to me. But I think some of these issues around time management and as an emerging manager in venture, some of these managers are working so hard that there is no personal time. And days merge into nights and weekends merge into weeks. They're just desperately trying to make their businesses very successful. In addition, something else that was disturbingly a surprise to me is we've had a number of emerging managers in venture talk about how the experience of raising money, especially from high net worth individuals, can deteriorate into some stereotypes around fundraising. There was one woman who went through our program who was married to another emerging manager in venture, and they both were talking to some of the same LPs. And one of the things that happened is they would compare notes afterwards about the questions that were asked. And consistently, she was being asked to talk about what she had done historically in her career. What did you actually do in that job? What was your role actually in that job? Who did you report to? What were your responsibilities? And consistently, the questions he received were on, where could this new venture fund go? What is the vision for this venture fund? What are the possibilities? So I think that it's really important for both institutional and somewhat less institutional investors to really be thoughtful and reflective about whether or not they are treating all managers the same, or if they have inherent biases in the questions that they ask or where they're spending their time. So that was a surprise to me.
That is absolutely fascinating, I think, and probably fodder for some kind of a case study at a business school, because that is a classic side-by-side comparison. And quite disturbing too. It seems this validation carries for some people, maybe because of the network they're in, whereas with others, there seems to be the need to validate or re-underwrite in every encounter, which I think is actually leading to my next question, which is around governance. And you have a number of board roles. You've sat on many boards, I'm sure, over the course of your career. And we've seen just recently, yet again, reminders of how governance can fall short on the oversight side of things. And we've seen bank troubles, we've seen digital asset troubles. What is your view as to what you bring to the table as a director and what makes a good director in that governance function?
I think governance is so important, and it is so easy, and frankly, it's easier for a CEO or for a venture capitalist to create a governance body that are all people that look like themselves and that have similar lived life experiences. It makes for easier decision-making, easier conversations, but often the wrong results. And so I do think that as painful as it is, there is real value to having governance of any organization be diverse, and not for diversity's sake. It's diverse so that you can have diversity of opinions, thoughts, leadership, points of view. It does make decision-making more challenging, but I think that's the point. And so I think that it's valuable not to just agree with everything. It's not to be combative in any way, but it is to offer a different perspective, a different insight, a different way of looking at things that perhaps others are not representing at the governance level. I will say that as an LPACs, Limited Partner Advisory Committees for venture funds, is a very specific role. There, the role is solely around managing conflicts of interest or providing guidance on the management of the venture firm or when the next fund is being raised. It's not investment decisions. And so that's very specific. But adding a different point of view on the topics that are brought up in those forums, I do think is valuable. Having had other experiences with other LPACs or with other boards, it allows you to have greater insight into the way you can add value to these organizations.
I'd like to move to some reflections now, because a lot of it ties to what we've already discussed. You clearly see the importance of executive coaching at every stage of a career, and given that's what you offer to the affiliates you work with. In terms of your own experience with key people, were there any key mentors or advisors or coaches that you had throughout your career that you can mention?
I think that it takes a village to create a career. I have had so many mentors and coaches along the way, really at every juncture. It starts at the earliest stages. My father was first in his family to go to college. He put himself through college. His work ethic and his focus on accounting and finance is really what drove me to start my career in that way. And I continue to have the same work ethic that I learned from my father and from my ancestors. And then I'll say the other mentor that really helped me early in my career was a gentleman by the name of Phil Halperin, who, when I was at Western Presidio for 7 years, in so many ways, when you're dealing with that kind of wealth and you're talking about that kind of money, it was a very large fund, and some of the politics that are going on, having an advocate for you, both to cheer you on, but also for you within the organization, I think is very valuable. Also, getting advice and counsel on how do I navigate this aspect of the firm is very valuable. I think it's important. And the word mentor is used too much in some ways. I think sometimes it's a friend or it's someone who you can lean on or you can ask those tough questions of and who'll stand up for you in the environment is really valuable. And it doesn't always have to be somebody within your own firm. But for me, just because I've always worked at firms where it ended up being so much of my time, it did end up being people in my own firm. That's just what worked for me.
And this wasn't the question that I had scripted, but given that venture is so prone, I suppose, to hit rates and winners and losers, and to, I suppose, one has to have a fair approach to risk that is well developed and refined based on that. When you look back at any investment mistakes or setbacks that you experienced over the course of your career, were there any key lessons learned there, maybe from backing the wrong person?
I will tell you that the best learnings come from the mistakes we make. I think that was true on my direct investing side, as well as on the fund investing side. One of the things that's important to me is that when I do due diligence on a company or on a fund, I want to have at least identified the risk. I might have underestimated the probability that that risk was going to hit, but I at least identified the risk. And there was a fund, I'll let them remain nameless, but there were perceived issues about one of the general partners and how he was in his personal life, the decisions he had made, how he'd conducted himself. And at the time, I'd always been trained that you are not going to date this individual. You are not going to be married to this individual. You're just trying to decide whether or not this individual is a good investor or a bad investor. And it ended up being that in this particular situation, his personal behavior ended up destroying the fund. So that allowed me to now realize that the world has changed in so many ways from when I started investing. And this is a better place. And now it does matter how you conduct yourself on the personal side of a human being, because you bring your whole self to your firm and you represent your whole self when you're raising capital or when you are investing in companies. And so it does matter. And so that was an example of something that now there's absolutely no tolerance for recast investing in anyone that's not behaving properly in their personal life.
It's intriguing that you say it didn't matter before, because you're right, it didn't seem to matter. And I'm wondering why, because clearly we know now that everything is linked, intertwined, and one's character is really what you see when no one's looking, I suppose. So I think with so many of the classic examples of bad governance I've given you, the roots have been in those personal elements. But so interesting. My last question then is around any advice that you might have whether gleaned from the course of your career or elsewhere, or any words of wisdom that you can leave us with?
I think it is so hard as a young person, but so important to be authentic, to bring your true self to the office. That's what's going to separate you from others. That's what's going to make you love your career, and it's going to make you the most successful in your career. So be authentic and be your true self.
Well, thank you so much, Courtney. You have had a wonderful set of experiences sitting around the table with many different hats on at different times. And that's brought a breath that I think you've captured here in terms of the snapshot of the industry today, as well as a wonderful warmth that is characterized by a lot of giving and a lot of lifting others up, that the classic image of climbing the ladder with one hand behind you. So thank you so much for coming here and sharing your insights with us.
Well, thank you for having me and for your kind words. Really appreciate it.
I'm Ethan Devitt. Thank you for listening to the 50 Faces podcast. If you liked what you heard and would like to tune in to hear from more inspiring investors on their personal journeys, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment advice, and all views are personal and should not be attributed to the organizations and affiliations of the host or any guest.